All right, our next case for argument, both counsel, you're familiar with the procedures here, but I'll go over it as you're getting settled in anyways. So counsel for appellant, you'll have 15 minutes for your argument. You'll have 5 minutes for your rebuttal. And counsel for respondent, you'll have 15 minutes. And please make sure you state your name for the record. This will be recorded and there'll be an audio recording later. And as you both know, the podium adjusts. It's little buttons right underneath the center of the podium. And I'll ask the marshal to call the next case.
Case A23-1205, State of Minnesota versus Bradley Joseph Wilson Jr.
All right, and counsel for appellant, feel free to get settled in at the podium, and when you're ready, you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is John Donovan. I'm an assistant state public defender, and I represent the appellant in this case, Bradley Wilson Jr. Mr. Wilson was convicted of three crimes in connection with a series of encounters with JE. Those offenses were stalking, harassment, and violation of a harassment restraining order. I've raised several issues in my brief. My argument today will focus on the second issue regarding harassment, coercion, and a threat to unlawfully injure a profession. The harassment charge here required the state to prove that Wilson harassed J.E. by the commission of the unlawful act of coercion, which requires proof that the defendant caused another to do an act against their will by threatening to unlawfully injure their profession. Essentially, coercion has two parts, the act and the threat. You do this or I'll do that. The act can be anything. It's the threat to injure that has to be unlawful. Here the state alleged that Wilson committed coercion when he told J.E. to continue their relationship or he would tell their boss to fire her. That evidence is insufficient because nothing about that statement threatened to unlawfully injure J.E.'s profession. The parties seem to agree that unlawfully means unauthorized by law. Nothing about Wilson's threat would unlawfully injure J.E.'s profession. Telling someone you're going to get them fired is not illegal under any criminal statute, nor is it tortious, nor does it create some other cause of action.
Does the unlawful have to be criminal? Could it be an unlawful civil?
I think it could be unlawful civil. I think it maybe seemed, I was phrasing it in my principal brief, as though it had to violate a statute. I think it's a little broader than that. I think it could be civil. I think it could be a civil cause of action under statute. A tort would also qualify.
But counsel, this all kind of revolves around the incident where they were drinking and there was some sexual behavior. And under Minnesota slander law, isn't lack of chastity per se defamatory, and isn't that unlawful?
Well, no, for a couple of reasons. The coercion here is the act is continue to see him. And then the threat was he would tell Paul to fire her. He doesn't say he's going to tell Paul, who's the owner of the restaurant, about the relationship. Her testimony is that he would tell Paul that he was close to Paul and he could get her fired by talking to Paul. That's
but
the threat.
In the testimony itself, she relates not only the incident with the employer, but also the incident or the threat to tell her boyfriend what she'd been up to. So it does sound like he's certainly dangling lack of chastity.
Well, I don't think that would qualify as how this was charged here because her boyfriend is not involved in her profession. The threat has to be to unlawfully injure her profession. I think what you're talking about is more coercion under 1-4, which was held unconstitutional, to reveal a secret. And that about Stephen is something different. What we're talking about here is the threat to tell Paul, the boss, you see me or I will get you fired. And it's not even he's going to tell Paul about the relationship. He's close to Paul. He has sway with Paul. He can talk to Paul and get her fired. That's the threat. But nothing about that is unlawful. And I think that that's maybe best established by if we switch the parties here.
Well, I think his conduct was reprehensible. So if we're the issue just boils down to whether, in fact, there was something illegal about what he said, and it, following up on whether this can be a civil illegality, would defamation fall into that? I mean, and that has to do with Judge Kirk's question about chastity and perhaps revealing her her sexual undertakings. I mean, isn't that defamatory? Would that fit into that equation?
No, it would have to, if we wanted to go with that, we could go defamatory in a couple of ways. They actually talk about that in Jorgensen. You could say criminal defamation. Then that would be the unlawful act for harassment, which is, I know I've said a sort of nesting doll scenario here. That could be the unlawful act for harassment, but they're charging it as coercion. So it would have to be false. The statement he's going to tell Paul would have to be false to be criminal. I think that's the statute, or at least tortiously defamatory. It has to be false.
Is Jorgensen the primary case that supports your client's position?
I think so, yes, Your Honor. And really, just to get back to this, what the threat is all the threat is that we have, what her testimony is, saying that he was very close with Paul and that he could have me lose my job. Sort of just skipping a couple lines. Threatening to send a text that would ruin my life, threatening, referring to telling Paul, the boss, or Stephen, the boyfriend, who doesn't come into this because he's not her boss. Telling them what? So with Paul, it would be who knows, telling him who knows what to have me lose my job. So we don't even know what he's going to say. But if we just sort of flip the parties here, if he said, I want you to continue to see me, or I'm going to talk to Paul and I'm going to get you fired. If J.E. says to Wilson, I want you to stop bothering me, or I'm going to talk to Paul and I'm going to get you fired. She's made the exact same threat, but neither one of those threats is unlawful. Neither one of those threats to I'm going to talk to your boss and get you fired is unlawful under a statute. It doesn't give cause to a private cause of action. There's just nothing about it that's illegal. That's what we need here. That's protected speech. If we were to say, I'm going to talk to your boss and I'm going to get you fired because I want you to do something as coercion, every angry customer who's ever yelled at an employee would be fired. I want to talk to your boss. You fix my burger, or I'm going to get you fired. You get me, you know, back on this flight, or I'm going to get you fired. That's the threat. That's not an unlawful threat. Now, there are numerous ways you could unlawfully threaten someone's employment for coercion. You could threaten to reveal a trade secret on, you know, some secret property. You do this, or I'm going to reveal the 11 herbs and spices in KFC's original recipe. That would be a private cause of action. That would be unlawful. You're going to injure them unlawfully by revealing a trade secret. If there was a contract here and you say, I'm going to fire you in violation of this contract, that would give you a contract cause of action. That would again be unlawful. If you were to say, I'm going to, you know, if you own a food truck and I'm going to pour sugar in the gas tank of your food truck, that's unlawfully injuring their profession because that would be criminal damage to property.
What about hostile work environment? Would that qualify as an unlawful?
That would again go to, that would have to be the unlawful act in harassment. Because what coercion is about is a threat. It's not doing an actual act. It's saying, I'm going to do an actual act. And the threat that he made wasn't, see me or I'm going to create a hostile work environment. The threat is, as she's understanding it, I'm going to talk to Paul and I'm going to get you fired.
So your argument, it seems that the threat has to be very specific.
Yes.
In order to qualify under the coercion unlawful.
Yes. And that's what I'm getting at, is just telling someone, I'm going to talk to your boss for at-will employees is not unlawful. I know that this seems, you know, uncomfortable given the circumstances, but the act is any act. And what we have to focus on is the threat. Because as Jorgensen said, you know, it doesn't matter what the act is. It's just that you don't want to do it. It doesn't have to be illegal. It doesn't have to cause you injury or harm or the words of Jorgensen or even hurt your feelings. You just have to not want to do it. And then that person has to threaten, communicate, say something, speech, to get you to do it. And that's what it is. I know there are other, you know, sort of unlawful acts that we could maybe say, well, maybe what he did would qualify as this. Maybe what he did here would qualify as that. But then that's how this harassment charge should have been charged, as this is the unlawful act. But the charge was based on this theory of coercion for unlawfully injuring her profession. So just,
If you prevail on the issue you're addressing right now, is it your position then that the remaining charges fall by the wayside because they're all hinged on this predicate offense?
Violation of a harassment restraining order, that misdemeanor would not be affected. But because this was the unlawful act for harassment, then the harassment conviction would have to be reversed. And because the harassment conviction would have to be reversed and stalking requires two or more acts and there's only one remaining, which is the violation of a restraining order, the felony stalking would also have to be reversed.
But you're, did I hear that right? You're conceding then the violation of the HRO is still out there?
That would still be out there. Yeah, and I would have no other issues in this case. That would resolve issue one, it would resolve issue three, it would resolve issue.
That takes care of the sentencing issues and.
Yeah, because my sentencing issues were about multiple convictions, and then one was for the gross misdemeanor for this offense, so it wouldn't affect the sentence for the violation of a harassment restraining order. That was a 90-day sentence. That would be unaffected by this. So there would still be a conviction in place here. So I don't want to beat a dead horse, but just to sort of just briefly repeat this, even the way the state has phrased this on how he lacks authority and giving examples of when you might have grounds to fire someone, it's still the same threat. I think the state's examples were stop stealing, don't be insubordinate, don't be rude to customers, or I'm going to talk to the boss and get you fired. That's the same threat that we have here. That's not unlawful. You can tell someone, I'm going to talk to your boss and get you fired without committing criminal coercion. I think I've said all I wanted to say today, unless the panel has any questions about anything. I would cede my time.
Not seeing anything. Thank you, counsel. Yeah. And you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. And counsel for respondent, when you're ready, take your time to get settled in and you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, my name is Peter Magnuson. I'm an assistant attorney general and I represent the respondent, state of Minnesota. Appellant wants to muddy the definition of unlawful. First, he agrees that unlawful means unauthorized by law. But then he says, this isn't unlawful because it isn't illegal. That isn't what the phrase unauthorized by law means. He's reversing it. Unauthorized by law means you have to be able to point to something that authorizes your action. The state doesn't have to point to something that makes your action illegal. You have to, unauthorized by law, was there an authority for the defendant to say what he did? And there isn't any authority. He can't point to any. So he wants to point to, well, the state can't point to anything that makes this illegal. That's irrelevant. The issue is, was it authorized by law? It was not. As one of the panel pointed out, this is reprehensible conduct. We would never say, and in fact, now there's a sexual extortion statute, but that wasn't on the books back then.
But that's just it. We've had a statutory change since this occurred.
I don't think that cuts against us. I think it's just a recognition that these are cases that have been out there for a while, and maybe it's high time we have a specific statute that recognizes it. But
How do you get around the holding in Jorgensen? And I'll be frank with you, I was quite taken by Justice Gilday's dissent, but that is not the majority opinion. How do you get around Jorgensen?
Well, which specific part of Jorgensen?
Well, where they define unlawful.
Well,
the whole free speech aspect that, you know, in if you can go out and shout it on the street corner and it's not a threat, but if you say it in this context that it would not be criminalized.
Jorgensen involved a challenge to the statute. There was no challenge made here below. There was no challenge, facial challenge to the statute. There was no as-applied challenge to the statute. So the First Amendment concerns, I don't think, are properly before the court.
I'm not raising a First Amendment issue. I certainly wouldn't want to supplant what the issue is. But Jorgensen gives us definitions on the criminalization of it, and that's what I struggle with because Jorgensen came out in 2020, and this activity preceded that.
Well, Beganovich, I'm not sure, but that came out in 2023. So to the extent there's a change, the more current law is the one that's controlling. But again, this wasn't prosecuted as a coercion case. This was prosecuted as a harassment case with taking this language from the coercion statute. So was this Was there a quid pro quo here in this case, an unlawful quid pro quo? And I think the evidence supports that there was. So even on an as-applied challenge to this, I don't think this is protected. This would cover protected speech. I don't think there's a court that would say that that's protected speech to threaten to get somebody fired if you don't continue to have sex with me, or I'm going to expose our relationship and if you don't continue to have sex with me. So I don't think that's, as applied here, I don't think that's, there's a First Amendment issue.
But I don't know that the threat was, if you continue to have sex with me. It sounds like the threat was, continue to see me, right? It wasn't, I didn't see that level of specificity in the transcripts.
I think specifically with the January 2020 incidents, that was after the first one. I'm not sure that I have those highlighted here. But the January 2020 incidents, I think there was a specific reference that she believed there was an expectation that she would have to have sex with him. And she then testifies that these threats continued pretty much every shift that she worked, and she worked 5 or 6 shifts a week, and they continued all the way through November until she left. With respect to the first issue, I've been looking again at Shunk, of course, and I think Shunk actually, when I've read it again, I think Shunk actually supports the state's position. Shunk says, when you're going to challenge the jury instruction, but you didn't raise it below, we're just not going to address it. It's just an invited error application, and we're not going to get to it. So that's a civil case. There is no criminal law there. In the civil case, the law is what are the allegations in the complaint? And the Supreme Court said we're going to look at the jury instructions, which said and the jury instructions aren't quoted in Chunk, so we don't know exactly what they were, but I get the impression that they were just a general instruction, and the jury came back with a general verdict awarding the home buyers, who were the counterclaimants in that case, some damages. So they just went to what was the jury instruction, because that's what we need to look at here, because there is no criminal statute. It's just what were the allegations. And the jury instructions were the same allegations as were contained in the complaint. So in that regard, it's very similar to what we have here. We're just going to look at what was alleged in the complaint. And at the end of the day, what if this court reverses on that first issue, you're not going to be writing wrong. The jury instruction here did not hurt the defendant. The jury instruction here benefited the defendant, by possibly allowing the jury to not convict on when it was authorized to convict under the statute. So if this court reverses on that, you won't be righting a wrong. You'll be rewarding gamesmanship by not objecting to the jury instruction below and then coming here and saying based on these jury instructions. We not only get a reversal, we don't get a new trial. It's an acquittal and I can't be retried.
Let me ask you about that January incident that you say is more specific. How do we deal with that incident with the jury instruction about the you have to find something between April 1 and 30, 2020? That's outside that time frame what the jury was instructed.
It is, and I'll admit that there could be better evidence on it, but that's not the standard of review here that this court has. Is there evidence in the record? Could the jury reasonably find the way it did? The victim in this case testified that there were constant threats made against her and that they were made again pretty much every shift, and that she worked 5 or 6 shifts a day. She never parsed out April as a time when she wasn't subjected to these threats. I think the jury could, based on the evidence, realistically and reasonably find that he had violated made those threats within April. So, you know, you're not an appellate jury here that reweighs it. The issue is, could the jury have reasonably found him guilty? And on this evidence, I think it could.
To affirm, do we need to find something in that time frame, though? A threat? Because that's how the jury was instructed.
No, I don't think so. Again, could the jury, based on the evidence, reasonably find that that element had been met? I think based on this evidence, it could. If there are no other questions, I will cede my time.
I'm not seeing any, so thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
And counsel for appellant, if 5 minutes for rebuttal, if you'd like to use it.
Thank you. I'll just make three quick points on rebuttal. First, the state is saying that Mr. Wilson has to point to something that authorized the speech. I mean, it's the First Amendment. Speech is presumptively permitted, and his conduct has to be illegal or be some sort of speech that we're going to prohibit in order to say that it's not permitted. To say that someone cannot say, I'm going to talk to our boss and get you fired, without pointing to a law that permits that, I mean, that runs counter to the First Amendment. You know, I'm not just saying illegal. I said I did broaden it. It could be a civil cause of action, but there has to be something that makes it unlawful. Secondly, Judge Schmidt, to what you were asking about the specifics of what he was trying to get her to do with that, it was just to continue to see him. Her testimony is, when you return to work after the holidays, what was it like working with Bradley Wilson? Uncomfortable and unpredictable, because sometimes it would be very upbeat, cheerful, and funny. Other times it was very threatening, and I think still wanting to spend more time together. And if I wasn't available, I'd receive threats. What kind of threats? The threats I would receive were surrounding saying he was very close with Paul and that he could have me lose my job. And that's how the jury was instructed as well, that he wanted to continue a relationship with her. It wasn't just to get sex. Finally, that's the only threat we have. That and the other line I quoted, it's on the same page, on 445. About a threat to the job. And the state has said in its brief and said again here today, she said he was threatening him throughout. We need a specific kind of threat here. We need a threat to unlawfully injure her profession. He was charged with 3 other counts of threats of violence. He was acquitted of all those counts. And she never gives any specifics other than this time in either late December, early January, about threatening her job. Everything else was just generalized. I acknowledge that she says, yes, he threatened me. But we need that specific threat for this count, because that's what coercion is. It's threatening to unlawfully injure a profession. So if the panel has no other questions, then I would cede my time.
All right. Thank you, counsel. This case is submitted. We will get an opinion out in the statutory time frame. Thank you for your briefs and your arguments today.